You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
8 minutes after 11, and this half an hour, you're going to be speaking to Oxford academic Dr. Miles Tandy, who's on the line with me about Zimbabwe. And like I said this to Miles as well on Twitter this morning. You blink and then things change. I can't even keep up with the kind of detail about what's going on currently. You do an hour of broadcasting on something else about Cyril Ramaphosa, about the SABC, and then there's a new development in Zimbabwe. So for all I know, everything I've planned to chat to Miles about is already obsolete. But be that as it may, you will certainly enjoy his analysis as a scholar who pays very close attention to what's going on in his country of birth, Zimbabwe. Miles, thank you so much for making time for us. I really do appreciate it.
No, thanks for inviting me. It's a show.
It is only a pleasure, my friend, and it's lovely to hear your voice again. There's sort of two different conversations I want to have, Miles, and I guess we can flip between them, and as I said, you shoot the breeze a little bit. I know how important it has been in your career to take a long view of the issues in Zimbabwe. All of us, not all of us, but many of us are coming to the current story as if it happened last week. We suddenly have to learn to pronounce names that we never took seriously as your neighbor here in South Africa. But of course, these things have very long roots. And I've been very curious. I've only had one listener on my show in the last 5-6 days of broadcasting who've even mentioned the word Britain, for example. So can I ask you this as a starting point? Let's set aside what is going on as we speak. If we take an historical viewpoint, what broadly, and I know it's a big question, but broadly speaking, how far back in history should one go to try and understand the current crises? Is it a crisis fundamentally that goes back to post-1980 Zimbabwe and the way in which political agency was exercised by the political actors? Or do we need to go back longer to understand truly what the roots are of the crisis?
I think much longer. I think you'd have to start from the late 1970s when figures such as Mnangagwa come onto the scene. And I think what's essential to understand about particularly the figure of Mnangagwa is the fact that when he came onto the scene in late 1970s, I heard Brian Kagoro on your show yesterday say he arrived in 1976. It was actually 78. And he wasn't Mugabe's first choice to become his special assistant. Mm. There's some controversy around that. So from that time, although Mugabe used Mnangagwa quite effectively to accomplish various political tasks, he was always uneasy and distrustful of him. And I always like to say to people who say that Mugabe and Mnangagwa are very close, the fact that the people you keep closest, you make your intelligence minister. Mm. And Mnangagwa has not been the intelligence minister in Zimbabwe since the 1980s. So they worked together, but it was never really a close relationship. And Mnangagwa was never Mugabe's choice as successor. That's how I see it. That's one level. But then there's also the 1990s. There's been a long struggle succession to get Mugabe out. And the key succession figures from the 1990s were Emmerson Mnangagwa and Solomon Mujuru, who died in a house fire in 2011. Now, there is some controversy about the nature of his death, but the nature of his death allowed the purging of his wife, Vice President Joyce Mujuru, in 2014, after which Mnangagwa was set for a home run, so to speak. Mm. So there's all these backstories, assassinations, distrust from the 1970s at play. It's a lot of history to go with, and I quite disagree with a lot of the analyses focus on grace, the fact that it's the rise of grace that has caused this. I don't think so. Grace is a newcomer. These things have much longer roots going back to the 1970s.
What I'm finding fascinating, Miles, is how suddenly those of us who are observing what's going on in Zim, we have to deal, we quickly in the last 72 hours literally had to shift from, as I said to you on Twitter, from seeing this as a moral black and white issue where you have Bob bad, anything but Bob good. And now we have to try and understand the fact that the internal machinations within ZANU are very complicated. The army leadership itself appears not to be homogenous. And last night, Sky News was breaking this story where we thought, oh, okay, Emmerson is going to fly back and have afternoon tea and scones and cucumber samis with Bob. And then Emmerson is saying, no, 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 I'm actually not even sure about my own safety and whether that can be guaranteed if I have to try and get anywhere near Mugabe for a conversation. Can we slowly unravel one or two of those complexities? Let's start, for example, with the army. I mean, the army is not a neutral actor in how things are playing out.
No, it's definitely not. And it's very much a divided institution. I would not say that the army 100% is behind Mnangagwa. And part of the divisions, I talked about the 2011 assassination of Solomon Mujuru. Part of the divisions are around that. There is a section of the army, particularly around Constantine Chiwenga, the commander, that is very much behind Mnangagwa. But then you also have to speak of the rank and file. I interview a lot of the rank and file for my own research. And often when they would make critiques about the status of the country, they were actually criticizing their commander, Chiwenga, on the grounds that conditions in the army had declined, that they joined the army to be professional soldiers, but were now expected to take on all these political tasks. Mm. So their first port of criticism was actually their commander. So it's a very much divided army. The police as well were not on the side of Mnangagwa and Chiwenga, nor was the civilian intelligence body, CIO. And yet military intelligence on the other side was on the side of Mnangagwa and Chiwenga. So it was a very divided security sector currently pertains.
Now, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, it's very easy to say, nah. I never believed that the euphoric pictures and euphoria that was being broadcast from Zim over the weekend, I never believed that this meant that suddenly the leadership within the securocrats are now on the same page, that Bob must go. But honestly speaking, when everyone was glued to ZBC, and I have to say this is the first time I watched ZBC, and then Bob did not actually resign, Did that catch you by surprise, Miles, or did you anticipate that this wily old man may have a couple of aces up his sleeve?
That didn't catch me by so much surprise. For obviously, you kind of pinch yourself, okay, so he didn't resign. Yeah. But I, knowing Mugabe's traits, I expected it would be hard. What really surprised me, and I think many others, the real surprise here, is that for a long time we knew that Mugabe wasn't popular. There were serious economic challenges, serious political problems. But over the years, as we all know, he had managed to remain in charge. So, here was the persistence of this undemocratic leader. And we also assumed that he had a close relationship, hand in glove, with the military. Mm. So what we always sought to understand, was the endurance of his leadership. And in fact, my next book project was going to be about why Robert Mugabe lasted so long. And in focusing on why, the reasons for him lasting so long, we neglected to look at actually the chink armor, so to speak. Mm. The weaknesses, how this might actually fall apart. And I think that's why we missed this, why none of us saw a coup coming.
Absolutely. 17 minutes
after. That's a real surprise.
Let's take a little bit of a break there and more conversation with Oxford academic. He's also a journalist, fantastic writer and author and lecturer, Dr. Miles Tendi. And we are trying to unpack some of these historical roots, but also flipping between that. And one has to obviously also pay attention to the year now in terms of how this crisis is playing out. It is not moral black and white. We now know that. And some of these complexities are hard to get a grip on when you thought that there was one clear line running throughout what's going on in Zim at the moment. Not so. 18 minutes after 11.
Eusebius is on Twitter.
at Eusebius.
We're talking about the historic roots, how deep they are in terms of the current Zim crisis with Oxford academic Dr. Miles Tandy. Miles, there was a very sobering intervention on one of my open lines last week from a Zimbabwean who lives here in Johannesburg, and he said that we have to also take into account that even though Emerson has got a history and a biography that is checkered, that there's no one in Zim politics who is untainted. And I don't often, go speechless on air, and I did because that is so true. This is not about ideal theory. So if we take that reality from a real politic point of view as a starting point for the next question, what really, if you had a magic wand, and obviously you don't, but if you had one, what are the best prospects out of this current quagmire? Because the truth of the matter is that, as Brian said yesterday, and I suspect you agree with him to this extent, the process of deepening democracy in terms of democratization remains a journey that is fraught with all sorts of dangers, precisely because these characters who are now trying to be the double liberators pretend as if they don't have an odious past. But no one is untainted.
I agree with him, but I would qualify and just say some are more tainted than others. Mm. From after Mugabe, from the figures that remained, Mnangagwa is by far the most tainted. So that's deeply worrying. But more fundamentally for me, where my point really lies, is beyond the individuals. I am worried about the deep state. By the deep state, I mean the military. They were behind this. They remain behind the scene, divided as they are. They are a political actor. And for as long as there's no substantive security sector reform, I think the authoritarianism will persist. And even if Mnangagwa was to get the presidency, you have to begin to wonder, look, this will be a politician virtually installed by the military. Who will really be running who? Mm. A quiet army from behind the scenes, or Mnangagwa himself. So the real concern for me is about the military, beyond the individuals.
But the list of to-dos in terms of the things that need to be problem-solved before Zim can be back on a path towards a better future are so long that from a point of view of strategy and tactics, society needs to prioritize, which is why, as you heard yesterday, Miles, I put to Brian and a sentiment you had expressed on social media, which is that it's so difficult to know whether people who are excited on the streets of Zim should have a tough conversation with the securocrats, a tough conversation with factions inside ZANU-PF who are trying to topple Mugabe, or whether you say to yourself, one step at a time. Step number one, Cliff Bob. Step number two, we can have a conversation about making sure that we hold these folks accountable who are taking over from Bob. Obviously, one can walk and chew gum at the same time, but it's very hard in the moment when everyone from a psycho-political point of view cannot believe that Bob might be toast in a couple of weeks' time. It's very hard to focus on that impending reality and simultaneously have these deeper conversations, or do you think that that's too unambitious?
I think you can do both. And the reason I say that is because it's very clear what the army has done is not just about removing Mugabe. There are various plans they have for the after Mugabe period. And anyone who is going to respond to that also has to have 1, 2, 3, 4 steps as well, not just one to begin by removing Mugabe and then think about the next when the army is already 3, 4 steps ahead. Right. That's why I thought the Solidarity March was a lost moment. We should have said, yes, Mugabe, time for you to resign. But we also want X amount of things. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
After the marchers were done with the rally, they walked towards State House. When they arrived at State House, they sat down and were addressed by military officers who thanked them and said, we've heard your plea for Mugabe to resign. We'll take that back to him. Mm. Nobody walked up to these military officers, even with the petition, to say, but it's not just about Mugabe. It's this as well. Nobody asked questions. Mm. And they let that go. And then you see the statement by Mnangagwa this morning. What does he do? He plays the populist card. You know, he's now riding on that march, saying the Solidarity March demonstrated that you're unpopular. He's using it now to his own ends. Mm. This is what I mean about being three steps ahead. I think the civics, opposition party members, and intellectuals themselves, some anyway, should really take a long, hard look at themselves about how their response to this was rather inept.
Okay, let's take a quick call. Sean in Germiston, you're listening to this conversation. What do you want to say, sir?
No, I just want to... Hey, how are you, man?
I'm very good, thank you.
All right. You see, I'm just agreeing with the professor. The thing with the military in Zimbabwe, it's an intervention with military fighting for the function. This is not about removing President Robert Mugabe. Because according to the Constitution, the president is allowed to appoint and hire the president, isn't it? So I don't see what the military is doing, basically. It's just a function wall which needs to be solved at the end. Because now it has proved that the military has failed to remove the president. Because if they opt for coup, then they will face the consequences from the AU and the SADC itself, and probably the UN. So my worry is Zimbabwe must not be dragged, especially from the opposition side, that they are fighting the function all to strengthen ZANU-PF. If they want Emerson, if they want Robert...
Ah, we just lost Sean there. But actually, he sets up the last issue for today I want to touch on. We only have 3 minutes left, Miles. And I was actually sharing with one of my colleagues here, this is something that I know you have felt strongly about for many, many years now, which is, of course, the role of regional bodies and, you know, self-styled hegemons like ourselves in South Africa in relation to Zimbabwe. What should the role be? You have in the past criticized South Africa's stance in relation to Zimbabwe, as you've also the moralism of the UK as well. And now suddenly you have SADC, you have the AU, you have South Africa, you have our president sending envoys there. What do you make of how that is playing out?
I think they should be engaged, but even more strongly. I will criticize them again in the sense that, look, let's call this for what it is. If Jacob Zuma, for example, he reshuffled his cabinet a number of times this year. Effectively, this is what Mugabe did, and then he fired Mnangagwa as well. If the South African military had put Zuma under house arrest and reacted this way, right, what do we call that? That's a direct military intervention in politics. And you would expect the region to say no. Go back to the barracks. Zuma is the elected president. Respect the constitution. So I will be critical again of the region for not having taken a strong stand against that. Even here in the United Kingdom where I live, you can see the glee on Boris Johnson's face, right? That Mugabe is finally cornered and he's going out. And I think it speaks to the sense that he was an unpopular leader. A lot of people were uncomfortable with Mugabe for a number of years. But you can't then suspend democratic ideals, respect for the constitution, simply to get out a leader you don't like. He was elected in 2013, in an election that was recognized internationally. So stick with that. So I think it's problematic, the nature of the response
but
so
one,
far.
In 1 minute left, Miles, I just want to challenge you on that. How does one, however, square the circle? Because I, like you, obviously, particularly as a law student in my undergraduate years, would love to be able to preach the gospel of constitutionalism. But let's also be honest, in terms of real politics, constitutionalism has not exactly worked out very well for Zimbabweans like yourself. Bob has a legitimacy credibility problem. And so I find all the analysis that we get from people like Brian and you now in the last answer through the prism of constitutionalism, that too plays into the hand of Bob. A final comment.
Not necessarily. I mean, he had 6-7 months of his term to go. Probably what the pressure should have been was to say complete the term, but then you don't stand again. And the danger with this particular violation of the Constitution is that it's opened the door to the army. Mm. The army has made a direct intervention of politics, and it's been legitimized. It's received popular support. Coups tend to occur where they've occurred before. There has to be a precedent. So now, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. Mm. How to put it back in is going to be very problematic. The long-term consequences of this are deep than having stomached just 6-7 more months of a Mugabe president.
That's my view. Yeah, fair enough. Miles, love your scholarship and your journalism. Thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Yubi.
Cheers. That's Dr. Miles Tendu, who's an Oxford academic and a scholar on Zimbabwe. Complexity certainly is the order of the day in relation to our neighbor.